fire, Lord judgment. My own sweet time to the T24. I don't recognize you for things anymore. I don't wanna be defeated. I don't wanna be defeated. I don't wanna be defeated.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the show. I'm Shane. Very nice to have you. This is called Lead Singer Syndrome. It's a podcast that I do every single week. Whew. For the last 193 times, more or less. I've missed a few. I'm not perfect, but I'm here this week. I'm going to be here next week, too. Hit that subscribe button, by the way, while I have you, huh? People say, you know, they listen in the first 30 seconds, so I got to make this good. I got to plug the things. Iconic.com/LSS. Go to there too, okay? Capital LSS. Go there now. But hey, I'm back with a great episode. With actually a really great episode. Very informative. A little different, which I love. I talked to Matthew Murphy of the Wombats. Of a brand new, very, very, very good, very strong project that is just coming out. It was supposed to be out this week, but it's got delayed by 2 weeks, but it's coming out. The project is called Love, Fame, Tragedy. It is sort of a solo project for Matthew Murphy, and I'm going to play a tune at the end, and you're going to be like, oh man, this is good. I'm going to go on Spotify. I'm going to pre-save this. That's a thing now. I didn't even know that was a thing, but you can do that. It's cool. Yeah. Pre-save all my stuff too while you're at it. But it's a great episode. I'm so glad you're here. Let's get to the business end of things before we get into the nitty-gritty. If you want to get in touch with me, very easy. I have an email address if you still use email. People don't anymore. It's weird. I think it's great. But you can email me. I'll read all my email. I have been getting so much lately, and I love it. I've been slacking a little bit. I've been doing some songwriting and stuff and a little bit crunch time for that. So I've been sort of busy, but I do read it all 100%, and I love the feedback. So here it is, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. You probably don't even have to write that down. That is the email address. Hit me up on there or add me to social media if you're more of a looking at photos and very short sentences kind of person, as in Instagram and Twitter. I'm on there too, both the podcast and my personal stuff. Just check all that out. And I guess, you know, I should say that we have a lot of other episodes. I mentioned this is episode 193, which kind of blows my mind when I say it out loud. But that means we have 192 other ones with other lead singers. Can you believe there's 192 bands in this world? Actually, there might be less. If you only ever heard this, you might be like, well, there's a little bit less actually because you've had a couple people on the show multiple times. Yes. Well, I don't know how many bands there are, but this show is going to keep going until I've talked to the lead singer of every single one. So go back and listen to all 193, including this one, episodes, and then once you've done that, or before you've done that, it's fine too, check out the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. For as little as $6 a month, that gets you a whole bunch of bonus episodes, some of which are with non-lead singers, which is pretty cool. And also, you get merchandise. It's the only way to get merchandise, actually, if you want a Lead Singer Syndrome t-shirt. And you get to be a part of an amazing community. And this story, I don't know if I should mention this on, you know, the air because it's a bit of a private matter. But these, man, just the group that I've brought together, the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club, and this isn't really a commercial anymore. This is just real life. We've become so close, and some of them have become so close with each other that one of the members, his name is Wayne. He lives in New Hampshire. He's from England originally, but he lives in New Hampshire now. He actually had a really bad situation with his cat, and his cat needed emergency surgery, and he couldn't put up the money because, you know, it's hard sometimes, you know, make ends meet, and it was a very, very heartbreaking situation. And one of the other members, who I won't name, but she helped him out, and she drove up there, and she took care of the cat, and she paid for the surgery. And that's just a beautiful thing that we've we have in this group. And it's just, it's cool because it's more than just a podcast group. So anyway, I know I'm going on and on and on, but it is awesome. And I want to give a huge shout out to the Sinners for all that. I mean, Sinners is such a funny name when I talk about these stories. Such a beautiful thing, such a beautiful thing we've created with this group. So just check it out. It's leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. And yes, all that money goes to keeping the show on the air, as well as some of our sponsors. Like I mentioned in the beginning of this whole ramble, iconic.com, EYECONIC.com/LSS. That's capital LSS. Go to that link. If you wear glasses or contacts, they got awesome stuff and a great deal if you use my promo code LSS. Also capital, I think. So yes, check that out. Please, there'll be an ad later in the show. They just are great people, and they help this happen and conversations with the amazing Matthew Murph Murphy. So I guess let's get into it. Here it is, my conversation with Murph. Let's dance the Joy Division and celebrate the irony. Everything is going wrong, but we're so happy. Let's dance the Joy Division and raise our glass to the ceiling, because this could all go so wrong, but we're so happy. Yeah, we're so happy. Well, dude, thanks for doing this, man. How's your day?
Yeah, it's good. I dropped my dog off for some dental surgery, which sounds pretty LA, but she did need it. And then I've been doing interviews, and I need to eat something. Sure. And then I got to go downtown and do a load of shit, and then I fly to London tomorrow. So,
oh my God,
it's a busy one.
Very busy, yeah. Monday. Yes. Monday morning. Yeah. Well, dude, thank you, man. So much to talk about, but I want to start with the gig you just played with the Rolling Stones. A few days ago, right?
Yeah, Friday night, yeah.
How was that?
No, sorry, Thursday night. It was awesome, yeah. I think that was our first time ever playing a stadium.
Yeah.
Second time. We played with the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Yeah, it was awesome. You know, we got to meet, but I just assumed we wouldn't meet any of them, but we got to meet all of them.
Ah, cool.
Keith Richards blessed my 10-week-year-old daughter, 10-week-old daughter. And yeah, it was really cool. It's very special.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I mean, you guys had a little bit of fame with Mick Jagger, you know, after surgery, dancing to your song.
Yeah.
Is that how this thing all came about? Was there,
yeah,
he,
basically,
he's a fan?
I think, yeah, apparently he's like, we're all over his Spotify playlists and stuff like that, which is weird to think about. And yeah, I guess he's just like techno fan, and I guess it gets him geared up. So yeah, and so I think our US agent kind of spoke to theirs, and first off they offered us the whole tour, but then they changed their minds, and now they're doing different support bands every night.
Okay.
So we just did the New York one, which actually is kind of awesome because we're all a bit tired and we weren't that up for doing a massive like support tour around America, wobbling around on a bus.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean, also I feel like touring with the Rolling Stones, as cool as it is to say you did that, I don't know if it really does that much for your band. You know, if you're trying to emerge more and more in America, like you guys have been doing over the last, you know, couple albums. So it's...
No, I mean, the truth of the matter is it was a complete ego show. It's something so we could... Right. It's basically so, you know, no one can ever call us a small indie band ever again. So that's basically why we did it.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, no, I mean, if we picked up 500 or 1,000 fans from that, I'd be pretty impressed.
Right. I know, it's one of those things.
And we played pretty well. I just made it sound as though we played shit, but yeah.
No, I mean, it's funny though, like, you know, I'm sure you've noticed this your whole entire career, how you can pick up fans in like the strangest places. Like, you know, there's like fans that to this day still like my band and still support my band 15 years later. And they saw us play, like, there was like 30 kids there. It was some dive. We played like shit. You know, I was drunk off my ass. I barely remember the show. You know what I mean? It's amazing how you can reach people even when you think this is fucking pointless.
Yeah. You just got to kind of like create like create bonds and mutual memories and all kinds of shit like that. And that's how they kind of really get into your music and your band and everything.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting.
Absolutely. So you have a 10-week-year-old daughter.
Yes.
So that's why you're so tired.
Well, and also, yeah, I've been traveling back and forth to Europe as well. Sure. It was not the best timing on our parts. But she's awesome. She's amazing. She looks exactly like me. Yeah.
That's a big step. You've got so much coming out with the solo record, Love, Fame, and Tragedy. I don't want to play the victim, but I'm really good at it. That EP is coming out September 13th, I believe. Is that the right date?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think so.
So you're a busy, busy man. And now you have a daughter. And how is this balance happening or not happening right now?
I'm just trying to stay healthy and like not have a nervous breakdown. that's kind of all I can do. I mean, my wife's amazing and she's like, she's got it all. She's got mothered and like dialed in now.
Nice.
So she is, she's been awesome. And I don't know. I'm just kind of managing to manage it somehow.
No, I totally, man. Well, dude, congratulations on all that and everything as well.
Thank you.
I wouldn't mind if, you know, you've been a bit of an enigma in some respects. I feel like you're the kind of person that really isn't scared to say anything in an interview, but at the same time, I don't know if there's that much out there about you and about your early life and about how you kind of came to become, you know, musician and frontman and everything.
Wow. Okay. That's a big one. So kind of grew up in a kind of quite a nice part of Liverpool. You know, it wasn't the Liverpool that Liverpool is today. It's had a lot of money pumped into it from the EU and things like that.
Right.
And it's a much better and safer city, but we always lived in a kind of nice neighborhood. My dad was, taught engineering at the time in like the kind of community college. My mum worked for like the council basically. I didn't come from money, but I wouldn't say I was like from extremely humble backgrounds.
Right.
I kind of have had a fairly weird relationship with my parents, I would say. It's just a very typical British kind of thing where we don't actually talk about anything or any signs of emotion kind of get pushed aside or get pushed down and come up in some like volcanic explosions. And I feel like maybe a lot of that is why I have the voice that I do, or why songwriting was such an attractive proposition. And my father would always play like the Beatles, Eagles, Beach Boys, lots of that when I was younger. And he kind of forced me, I guess, to play kind of classical guitar when I from starting at the age of five.
Oh, wow.
So I would always kind of play classical guitar. And then I had this really bizarre, kind of mid to late teens where I was smoking shitload of weed and I was in weird bands in Liverpool kind of doing almost like proggy stuff. And then I kind of messed up school a little bit. I still kind of made it through my A-levels, but I wasn't that great. Cause I was just high all the time, to be honest.
Okay.
And then I kind of just kept plowing with songwriting and playing guitar and being in a band. I remember hearing Creep by Radiohead one New Year's Eve. I was kind of listening to and that kind of like changed my whole life really. And then I did a degree in music. My grades weren't that bad. So I, thank you. Did a degree in music and that's kind of how I met Dan and Todd. And then there's lots of other things within that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, being from Liverpool, and you even mentioned the Beatles. I mean, obviously that's the biggest band ever to come out of Liverpool, the biggest band ever to come out of anywhere. Was there a feeling when you're growing up there, like, well, the Beatles are from here, I could make it? Because most people that grow up musicians are from, not from places like that. Was that a feeling? Was there a confidence there that you have a culture in a place that you live that has success?
Not really. No, like we, I mean, Liverpool is amazing for all the its musical heritage and stuff, and in a way a lot of people help you out and it's easy to get gigs and everyone's very friendly, and it's not as cutthroat as I imagine what it would be like starting a band in London or New York or LA. But for us, I think what was really helpful for us was that we weren't really ever a part of the Liverpool music scene. Like, I remember there'd be certain bands like the Coral, Zootons, there was that whole Delta Sonic label, and that everyone was always kind of like partying together and kind of boozing together. So, but we were always on the periphery of that, and we were quite shy and we didn't really get into that kind of whole thing. And in a way, that was, I guess that was really, in retrospect, that was really helpful. In terms of like honing our sound, not sounding like everything else that was coming out of Liverpool all the time, and not feeling overly what's the word? Fuck. Why have I forgotten this word? Like,
that happens to me all the time, dude. It's like a word you just know, and I don't know.
Yeah, this is like a two syllable word as well. We weren't trying to. Like battling against other people, you know, there was no rivalry.
Right.
We weren't
competitive.
We weren't competitive. Fuck.
Did I nail it? Is that the word?
That was the word. Yeah. We weren't massively competitive with it. Even though we are competitive, we weren't kind of massively competitive within the Liverpool music scene.
Yeah.
And I don't think we sound particularly like we're from Liverpool. And I think these have all been good things that have, you know, put us in good stead.
That's always the worst that happens with local bands and smaller bands when there's two, you know, hometown hero bands competing, you know, with each other, you know, some stupid rivalry, and none of them are ever going to do anything usually when they have that mentality, you know?
Yeah.
Like I used to manage this band, smaller, like hardcore band. And I remember this other band that was smaller than them in town. They got a guitar sponsorship with ESP guitars or something, and they're like, we're better than them, why don't we have an ESP guitar sponsorship? And it's that kind of mentality that's like okay, you guys are really missing the whole point of what we're doing here, you know?
But
so you guys formed the band, and obviously you had a lot of success, you know, pretty much right out of the gate with your first couple singles. I know I'm skipping over a couple of years here, but what's interesting, you know, now is you guys have put out only a few records over quite a long time. You've kept the same three-piece band together, and now you live in three completely separate places, very far from each other. How has that been? Is that, did I just sum up the whole history in about three sentences? But, you know, I don't even know my question here, but it's like, And why is it that you guys exist kind of in this fashion where a lot of bands, you know, put out records more frequently, or they live in the same city, or they're, you know, why is it that you guys exist in this way?
Well, you know, the reason why, especially our second and third album, there was such gaps between them coming out was because of, you know, we were signed to a major label, we signed to Warner in the UK, and like we were getting heavily A&R'd and we were getting heavily pushed, and you know, it was like, we need more Let's Dance to Joy Division, so moving to New York, so blah blah blah. And when you get that kind of pressure lumped on you, things just kind of tend to ebb and flow a lot more, maybe. Sometimes that pressure was good. I remember feeling really stressed out writing some of the best songs of my life, and really kind of chilled out writing some shit ones. But also, like, you know, for the second album, you know, I wrote like 40 songs. The third album, we had like 35. But the label wanted to make sure that everything we were putting out was, you know, as good as they knew we could be. And then we'd take ages to record. Like the second album, we used like three different producers on one song,
really?
Three different mixers. Oh, it was like, it was, even though it was 2011, it was like the 90s, the amount of money we were spending on the album and stuff. And so that was really the main reason why things took a long time to come out, which, you know, we didn't really feel comfortable telling people at the time.
Of course.
I think now the music industry is much more, it's not as opaque as it used to be. And it's kind of, it's more accepted for me to just tell people the truth and tell people how it is. And there's no need to kind of create such mystery as people perhaps thought there was in the past.
That's very true, man. That's very true. Well, as a songwriter and as somebody that's, you know, you've talked pretty in depth about your depression and anxiety, this sounds like a pretty horrible situation for you to be in. You know, your whole career, you know, your childhood dreams resting on this, you know, the second album you have to write in LA, recording it out there, which you didn't live at the time, you know, that pressure must have been just really, really horrible.
I mean, I had kind of depressive issues and tendencies starting from when I was like 14, I think. And then, and I've had like a few pretty funky breakdowns since. And as kind of like the primary songwriter in the band, I would always kind of work myself extra hard, like, because I knew the guys wanted to be out there touring and having fun and getting shit-faced and making money and whatever it is. So I would kind of really lock myself in a room and just, you know, I kind of thought the inspiration was for losers, to be honest. I was just like, let's just get in there and get nasty and just crank it out. Whereas, you know, that probably wasn't the best thing to do at the time. I should have been a lot more kinder to myself and a lot easier on myself. And that's something that I've kind of had to learn the hard way. But it is, the universe is pretty amazing when you kind of stop putting so much pressure on yourself and expect a lot less. a lot more seems to come your way.
That's great. That's a great way to look at it. So how long have you lived in LA now?
3.5 years.
3.5 years. And you've talked about it being a really positive experience for you. You've spoken very highly of LA. Do you miss the UK at all?
Yeah, I mean, I miss kind of friends and family and kind of certain aspects of the culture.
Greggs?
I wouldn't say with all the... What's that?
Do you miss Greggs?
Grids.
Greggs.
Oh, Greggs. No, fuck Greggs. I do miss it a lot. Maybe I miss it a little bit less with all the kind of Brexit stuff. I'm just so bored of that now. Like, I can't even, like... It's just insane. I'm going back. I'm flying back to London tomorrow, and I'm kind of, you know, excited about having a few days there for festivals at the weekend. And I do miss it, but, I think living in London for 10 years was a bit too much. I was probably partying too much. I just wasn't in the healthiest kind of headspace, and I was probably a bit negative and, I just feel like I'm 10 to 15% more positive and happier in Los Angeles.
Totally. You mentioned before that, you know, with all your mental health issues and stuff, that you have that. But also, I've heard you say that you write better when you're happier, which is interesting because I feel like I've always heard musicians say the opposite.
You are right better when I'm happier.
I mean, you said it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you were misquoted or if you meant it, but
I think that, like, I would be so stressed out and so kind of depressed and anxious that I'd like physically couldn't write.
Right.
But on the times that I could, it was really great. So you know, if I was in that particular headspace for a couple of years, maybe like I'd write 3 songs a year and they'd all be awesome. Or, yeah, I don't know. But then again, I think I've kind of written better songs since then, and I've been in a way happier mood. So,
yeah,
I really don't know.
with your lyrics,
songwriting's a dark, just a real dark art.
Yeah, I mean, it's when you say that it's a dark art, what do you mean exactly? Like, explain that. You mean just what you go through, what you put yourself through, what you torment yourself with?
No, just like when you think you've got it, you haven't. When you think you understand it, you don't. It's constantly changing, and every single time you do it, it's different. You never know what's going to happen. There's no rules you can follow. It's just, you've just got to lock yourself in a room and just freak out until you got something really. People who, you know, it's just a very kind of uncontrollable thing. It's like not that the work that you put in doesn't equate to the outcome. That's what's kind of so incredible about it, and what's so annoying about it.
Right. Do you do co-writes with other bands? Like, do you help other bands write songs? Do you write songs for people? Is that a part of? Is that something you do?
Yeah, I have been doing co-writes with other people. Yeah, I work with like a band called Dreamers, and. I wouldn't say it makes a huge portion of my paycheck, but it's starting to make a portion of it.
Right. And it's, I mean, that's a different thing, right? I mean, you're not, is it easier in a way when it's not just put all on your shoulders?
Yeah, it's so much easier because, I'm really just helping someone else find their voice. And
right.
If they're like, no, I really love this lyric, even if I think it's shit, I'll be like, yeah, go for it. Whatever resonates with you is the most important thing. You're the one who's going to have to tour it around the world for a while or whatever.
Right.
I really do enjoy it. Apart from when, when you work with an artist that doesn't really know what they want, or maybe hasn't even found their voice yet, then that's pretty hard.
Totally. Absolutely, man. So lyrically, I feel like your style is a lot different from other bands, you know, in the indie rock world. It's not so ambiguous or artsy. It's more pointed. I don't know if you'd agree with that, but where did that come from? It seems like it's a different approach that you take lyrically.
I don't know. I mean, certain songs, especially on the last one, Matt's album, pretty ambiguous. There's a few on the new Love, Fame, Tragedy stuff that I would say are quite ambiguous, but I guess I'm just trying to search for new metaphors, new ways of explaining things that have been that you already kind of know, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, it's weird. I remember listening to this interview with Alex Turner where he was talking about how the first album you're always pointing outwards at people and kind of criticizing, and then from the second onwards it's just you pointing inwards and criticizing yourself a lot. I'd say that's pretty bang on. But yeah, I mean, I haven't really overthought what my lyrical style is. I guess I just try to inject a little bit of humor into pretty dark kind of scenarios.
Right. But sometimes that helps, you know, get the dark points across. Like if it's all just darkness, you know, it doesn't sometimes make the same resonance that it does, you know, when there's an element of humor or an element of something that draws people in a little more. And I think that's probably what your fan base appreciates.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I like kind of my favorite, you know, lyricists were always been like Elliot Smith and Morrissey. Yeah, and
me too.
You know, maybe Elliot Smith doesn't inject. There is a bit of humor in his stuff. Maybe it's not that much, but just the way that they, I just fell in love with the kind of style of writing, to be honest.
Oh yeah, no. Especially like Morrissey, some of the ridiculous lines that he'll put in there, like just the no fear. The guy has no fear.
Yeah, just you know? How brutal they can be.
Right.
I mean, I don't think you could write a song. You know, the really tasteful thing about those two lyricists is like the brutal things that they can that they say just one time in each song, rather than you know for the whole duration of it.
Yeah,
that's kind of really important. I guess something that I'm always kind of got an eye on.
Absolutely. So I want to talk more about this new solo project, Love, Fame, Tragedy. And it's been a long time coming, I feel. I mean, you talk about all these songs that you wrote that obviously didn't make it onto Wombat's Records. I don't know how complete they were, how good they were, but were there songs from, you know, the old days that you were like, hey, this never got its chance? Are some of those songs going to see the light of day with this project?
No, not at all. Like, I mean, some of the all the Wombat songs that didn't come out is because, you know, I didn't want them to come out.
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
You know, maybe in the future, but I'm not really. I mean, there's talk of like doing a big B-sides kind of compilation thing, but I'm like, well, I'm happy for X, Y, and Z to go out, but the other ones, I don't think they're that good. So why would we do it? And then that's a whole other argument. But there's only really one song that I thought should have been on Beautiful People Will Ruin Your Life. It wasn't on there due to kind of nonsensical political reasons. And that's Brand New Brain, which is, I believe, the third song on this, and was just like my voice and a piano at the time. And then the rest have kind of come around over the last 2 to 3 years, whenever I've had time off between festivals or whenever I've kind of wanted to try and do something. And Mark Crewe, who's produced everything, you know, I was like, you know, trying to gauge from him whether he'd be up for like doing the, you know, recording everything with me and helping me out. I think when he said that, you know, he wanted to do it, it really gave me kind of the confidence to go out and find the rest of the songs.
So are you recording this all yourself? Are you bringing people in to help you? What's the approach?
Well, yeah, it's like me and Mark. Well, yeah, the songs are all demoed and then me and Mark in the studio just making them better. And I guess I'm playing bass and guitar and singing and getting people into drums. I can't play drums, but then also kind of getting people to come in and collaborate on the tracks, like Gus, like Joey.
Right,
Matt
right.
Chamberlain, whatever, right. You know.
There's a huge list here of the people that have, you know, it says, you know, your publicist says variety of friends and collaborators. Yeah. Pixies, Joey Santiago, Gus Unger, Hamilton of Alt-J, former Soundgarden drummer, Matt Chamberlain. So, yeah, it goes on and on.
And there's like kind of other people on other EPs. And I mean, the main reason for me doing that is I didn't want to present it too much as a solo project, even though at its core, that's what it is. You know, to me, it's a lot more exciting than that. And I didn't want it to sound like I'm in a pub in like Boston playing with an acoustic guitar and I'm like 4 pints in. You know, I definitely didn't want it to sound like that. And also it was, you know, trying to enlist some of the talented people that I've had the opportunity to meet over the years into the project, and, you know, just makes everything a bit more exciting.
It just sounds more fun. Like, it just sounds, everything about this is the way you described the way that the Wombats made, I mean, most of your records. This just seems like fun and chill and like something that, you know, a solo project should be, right? I mean, this should be an outlet for that, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's exactly what, when I sat down with the label, like last year, we were just like, the minute that it stops being fun is kind of the moment that we've fucked it all up. So let's just keep, you know, I'll keep churning out the songs and we'll try and get friends and family and people's great grandmothers to come and play on it. And, you know, the songs will be good anyway. And we'll just see what happens.
I mean, I have a solo project myself and my band members are totally cool with it. Me doing something on the side a little different. Is it cool with the other two guys in your band? Obviously you have such a small band. It's such a small knit, you know, I mean, I can't even say community. It's three people, you know, have they been supportive of it? Is there a fear that you're going to blow up and be huge and they're going to be like fall by the wayside? Was there any conversation like that?
Well, no, not really, because they've done their own things in the past, which kind of, you know, I've kind of dealt with in my own way or whatever. And they've had a lot of projects, you know. For me, I've never had the time or the opportunity to do it. Or I guess I haven't, I suppose I have never wanted to do something if I wasn't given it, you know, going completely, you know, all in on it. So I mean, there was, so because they'd done stuff like that before, there was never really a, the necessity to have a big sit down conversation about it. And what, and I think that they, I mean, they have been, I mean, they have been really supportive. I mean, in terms of what they actually feel, it's, you know, I don't know. I don't think they're going to be, I don't think they're walking around the respective, you know, cities of residents wearing Love Theme Tragedy t-shirts. Do you know what I mean?
Sure, but, sure.
But I think they're fine with it. And I've, you know, I've made it very clear that I want to, I want the Wombats to kind of get to album, you know, 6, 7, you know, etc. like that. But at the same time, I do want, you know, Love Theme Tragedy to be as big as it possibly can.
Well, launching a new band now and launching a new band in 2005 or whenever, you know, whenever you guys started to really put yourselves out there, it's a completely different world. I mean,
yeah,
like I don't even know if Love, Fame, Tragedy, if you're even going to press CDs anymore, you know, maybe, but yeah. Obviously that's such a, not a focus like it was, you know, when you're talking about the first couple Wombats records. How has that changed, you know, your approach? Is it just a weird way that you define what's successful? How is that, just like when you're starting a new project, how does that come into play with just the way that you go about, you know, your business and about just the way that you're giving the music to people?
Well, I mean, kind of DSPs have just really rejuvenated the music industry and really, you know, massively rejuvenated the Wombats.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You guys have great, great numbers like on Spotify and yeah. stuff. Really good.
And, you know, that was kind of awesome for us, because I think, like, well, I certainly was in a bit of a flunk between albums 3 and 4, and I was like, fuck, this is going to go either way. We got to come up with the goods here. And, you know, it seems to have gone really well. And it, like, I kind of love this whole kind of new streaming culture now. Obviously, it's kind of worked out in my favor, but also, I don't have to, like, in Love, Fame, Tragedy, I'm going to go around doing small shows, but I don't really have to be like out there putting my name out, trying to get a record deal, trying to pay, kind of find money to pay for the, you know, recordings or whatever, or dipping into my own money to pay for the recordings. Or, you know, I can, it's a real quick and easy way to do things now. And also the way that we're doing it, like just releasing what is going to roughly equate to a song every month and just seeing how things go and just slowly just drip feeding it out, seems like such a kind of great way to do things, which you never could have done in the past.
No, totally. It's awesome. I love that you guys have embraced it so much. And yeah, I mean, it's just, it's true. Like when you're making those records and you took a lot of time between records and you mentioned the reasons why, but it's like every time, you know, the way that the music industry was going, it's like, well, we're going to do this record, and no matter how much it, how good it is, it's just going to sell less than the last one. You know, it's like everything just, you know, it's like, how motivated can you be when like, it's like, oh, well now, you know, our last record maybe sold, and I'm just throwing numbers out there, but 20,000, and this one's maybe going to sell 10. And then, you know, it's like, it's just those kind of numbers when it's like, oh great. Well, this isn't exactly uplifting.
I feel that all came to a, you know, a head in like 2015, 2016, when Spotify and all these things kicked off, and now it's just a much more exciting world for everyone. And it's also kind of like, you know, this isn't entirely true, but I, you know, I do feel like if you've got an amazing song and it's well produced and it's got all, it's just a really solid piece of work, it has the opportunity to reach millions of people and stream massive amounts and all kinds of stuff. Whereas maybe back in the day when I started, you needed someone with you needed a big label or someone to really shove it down people's throats. Whereas really, if the song is good enough, it's gonna end up down people's throats anyway.
Yeah, I know. It is really a beautiful thing that anybody, literally anybody, can put music out and it can be in everyone's pocket, you know, in the world.
Yeah.
That never was possible before without, yeah, you have to get a fucking radio team, you know, in different territories and like this shit. And now it's like, okay, I upload it. You and I could record a song over the phone right now and put it up in an hour.
Exactly, you know,
and people could hear it. And if it's a great song, yeah, you're right. It can make waves, which is really what art should be, right? I mean, if we really boil it down, this is way more artistic than music ever been allowed to be.
It's not a level playing field, but it's it's much more level than it used to be.
No, I appreciate a major label artist saying that. It's not a level playing field. Yeah. That's good, man. Thank you for saying so. So you got a solo tour coming up too. It's in September, right?
Yeah, it's September and October.
It's a few dates. It's not like a crazy, you know, bite off more than you can chew.
No, I mean, only three songs will be out. So it's mainly about me being in these kind of cities doing press, right, as much as it is about the show and obviously kind of like, you know, getting back to basics and smashing out some small sweaty shows isn't going to harm anything.
Totally. But your biggest fans are all going to be at these shows. You know, Wombats fans. So what are you planning on doing? How are you going to approach this? I assume you're going to be playing with other people. What's the set list going to look like?
Well, the set list is going to be 9 songs, like EP1 and EP2 and maybe one more. I've got a band together in LA, which I'm really excited about. They're awesome. And we start rehearsing in a couple of weeks and see how it goes, really. As I said, these are kind of like small, sweaty, buzzy shows to kind of kick things into gear. And then hopefully there'll be a lot more touring next year.
So are you going to play, you're not going to play any Wombats material?
No, I don't think so. I feel like, I mean, you know, if someone buys me like 5 tequilas and forces me to do it, and then I end up like coming back on and playing some weird acoustic version of something, then maybe, but you know, I want to be as respectful to the Wombats, but more importantly, as respectful to Love, Fame, Tragedy and this new thing that I've started as possible. So, you know, I imagine if people start heckling me to do Wombats songs, I'll probably have to call them out on it.
Well, especially when you're with a band too. Like if you're just there solo playing with the guitar and you play a couple, well, that's a little different. But if you're playing Wombat songs and you're with a band, it's kind of like that's just the Wombats, right? It's just a kind of worse, maybe worse version, right? or not a worse version, but a synthetic version.
You know? No, it would definitely be a worse version, I think. I just think it's best for me to not even broach that road.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. So a couple songs out now. EP comes out September 13th. Dude, what else to tell the people?
I mean, obviously it's all kind of coming out in EPs and stuff, but for me, you know, it's make an album. And we've recorded 11 songs. There's about another 6 more to go. Hopefully it's going to be like a 17 or 18 track album.
Wow.
As long as all the songs come out well. I'm really excited about it. Excited to get back on the road and excited to get more music out into the public domain, I guess.
Do you like touring?
I love touring. But only like only when there's something fresh and exciting to promote. Do you know what I mean? Like touring. I mean, actually, festivals in the UK are really good. But if someone said, "Hey, you're going on an 8-week US tour and not, you know, you're just playing the same old songs you did last year," then I'd be like, "Wow, that sounds brutal." So I do still like touring, but that has to be a reason for doing it other than just kind of trying to make money or whatever.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate that. I just like part of touring for me is like, you know, I'm on tour right now. I'm in North Carolina today. Like, I mean, North Carolina maybe isn't a place that there's a lot of exciting, interesting things to do, but I always like that part of it, you know? just the being in a city and, oh, what, like, what cool coffee shop is here, or, you know, which friend of mine is here. So that's always been something. But I do have a lot of respect that for you, when you get on the road, this is, it's like, okay, I'm here to do a job. I'm here to, you know, play tunes and promote something that I've made artistically. And that's a, I mean, that's the whole point. So good for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, no, yeah, I do like, yeah, I don't know. What band are you in, and you're whereabouts in North Carolina, right?
I'm in Charlotte. I sing for Silverstein.
Okay. Oh, cool.
So,
awesome.
Yeah. I've been doing this a long time. So, I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina today. A day off, which is nice. And
nice.
We've been on tour for, you said, 8 weeks. Well, this tour is like 7.5.
Okay.
And we're at 6.5 weeks in. So I'm like, okay, I'm like, you know how that is. Like, I'm at the end of my rope. I'm like very, very ready to go home.
But do you not get a, I always find like week 5, 4 and 5 are the worst. And then you can kind of see the finish line.
But. Oh yeah. Yeah. Maybe I'm at the finish line now, or I'm like, okay, I'm a week out, but yeah, it's true. Like when you get, I find the middle of the tour always goes by really, really fast. And then you're like, you kind of realize there's only like a little bit left, like maybe, you know, yeah, 2 weeks left, and you're like, oh, and then that's like where the grind, the struggle begins.
Yeah.
But
it's fucking insane.
But I know,
especially on the voice as well. It's crazy.
Oh yeah, that's a good thing to bring up. This is being a podcast about singing. How does your voice hold up on tour? Does it hold up okay?
Pretty. It's got a lot better since I've just kind of, you know, tried to sing 70%. Quieter, I guess, rather than just getting up on stage, like after having a few drinks and just wailing my way through a set. But no, I've had a lot of issues in my voice, much more than most people do. Like, you know, I've ended up on prednisone and steroids a lot.
Oh yeah.
So that's something I'm very mindful of, which got a bit better when I stopped smoking. But it's really, I'm not the greatest at looking after myself, so it's kind of hard for me.
Do you use in-ears?
Yes, yeah.
So for me, that was like the biggest change when I started using in-ears, and then it was like not only did I, well, I hated it because I hate the way in-ears feel, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's definitely worse, but when you're playing like a show in a stadium with the Rolling Stones, it's kind of a requirement. But definitely once that happened and that became a thing, it was a big improvement both on the way I sang, like my performance and my health, for sure. It was like just way better, way easier.
Yeah, because you can crank it up so loud in your in-ears and just sing really soft. It's great.
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. Cool. Well, dude, thank you, man, for taking the time for doing this. And I know you got a big day, and congrats with the baby. Man, you got so much going on. It's an exciting time. Enjoy it.
Thanks so much. Nice to speak to you.
You too.
I was just thinking there's an amazing, like kind of Japanese rabata / barbecue place I went to in Charlotte last time I was there.
Oh yeah.
Maybe if you Googled those three words, it'd come up, but, that was, that place is awesome.
Thank you very much for the advice. I will Google it right now. It's about lunchtime for me. So that's perfect.
Okay, cool.
Man. Thank you.
Thanks so much. And have a good gig tomorrow.
Thank you, Murph. And all the
Thank
best
you.
With you.
Cheers. Thanks.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Bye now.
So there it is with Murph. I want to thank him and his entire team so much for doing this, taking the time to speak with me. It was awesome. And yes, in case you're wondering, the Japanese Robata Grill barbecue place was really, really good. So thank you, Murph, as well for that recommendation. Before I leave you with a tune, and what a tune it is, I want to thank you so much for being here. I want to remind you of the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club, which helps us keep this thing going. I also want to remind you just to hit the subscribe button, because that's real easy. And next week, we have a very, very special guest, a great friend of mine, coming off a big announcement. It's great. It's really, really, really going to be a cool, cool episode. So yeah, hit that button, whatever it is, smash it, smash the button. And go see Murph. He's on tour right now. I think he played his first show with Love, Fame, Tragedy, I think in California tonight. He's going to be there. He's going to be on the East Coast. So yeah, go head over, check it out. Because that's some good stuff. Oh, and while I have you, an announcement, Silverstein will be playing the Unify Gathering Festival in Australia in January. There are some great bands as well. Architects are headlining. North Lane, my buddy Marcus, yep, they're going to be there. And also, the triumphant return of the Ghost Inside to Australia, which is going to be an incredible thing to see. I am so, so happy that they're back. Anyway, I'm going to leave you with a tune, a love, fame, tragedy tune. And even though there's only a few tracks, it's not easy to pick one, but I think this one is a hit. Check it out. This song is called Backflip on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love, and I'll see you next week.